bigger in that regard, eh? During the conversation, Onyx had jumped up on the bar and looked at Jerry expectantly. Jerry addressed the cat. Your usual, Sir Onyx? The cat nodded, and Jerry poured a glass of scotch, setting it carefully in front of the cat. Jason looked on with a puzzled expression as Onyx leaned over the snifter and breathed in the aroma. The cat let out a soft purr and stuck his tongue gently into the scotch. Does he come here often? Jason asked with amusement. Oh, Onyx is a regular around these parts. I've never seen a cat that likes scotch. But hey, weirder things have happened. As Jerry said this last part, he casually removed his eyeball and polished it with a dish towel. He then popped his eye back in and turned to Jason. I expect you are here to reconvene our little council, hmm? The others are already downstairs. I will meet you down there in a jiffy. Jason made his way downstairs and entered the secret training area. Morgan and Rex were already seated at the table. Both seemed to be in good spirits. Rex had a large mug of beer sitting in front of him. It was pretty obvious that it wasn't his first. Grunt sat in the corner with a full keg. He would occasionally lift the massive barrel with one hand, dumping its contents into his open mouth. I guess that's one approach.
Ivar, Mr. Death and Destruction, Rex called out, his skeletal hand brandishing his mug. We've been waiting for you.
Rex was drunk. This seemed impossible. How did a skeleton even drink beer? Jason's confusion was dispelled a moment later when Rex took a large gulp from the mug. Jason could see the amber liquid pour down his throat and collect in a rough sphere where his stomach should have been. Dark energy wrapped around the golden globe, tearing it apart. Okay, skeleton digestion is strange. I'm not even going to question it. Hi, Rex, Jason addressed him before turning to Morgan. Hey, Morgan. It's good to see you outside of your library. Morgan chuckled darkly.
Oh, I wouldn't have missed that fight for anything. Forget what I said about skeletons, boy. You've discovered something interesting, haven't you?
She leaned across the table, her eyes glowing with curiosity. Maybe, Jason replied with a small smile. I'll fill you in on the details later. Once they were all seated and Jerry had joined them, Jason recounted the last few days. He described the creation of the Bone Demon and the final fight with Alexion. The group had seen some of the events since they had helped defend the wall, but hearing the full story seemed to enthrall them. Jason left out the part about Riley. He wasn't really certain what to say to them about her. He hadn't spoken with her yet or made up his mind about how he felt. Jason also told them about how he had been appointed as the regent of the Twilight Throne. He hesitated slightly before revealing that he had added approximately 900 residents. He was reluctant to add to their workload. However, it was better that they found out now rather than later. As expected, Rex and Morgan grimaced at the news. I know there's going to be a ton of work that needs to be done to add the new residents, Jason said. However, I want the three of you to know that I am grateful for all that you've done so far. You are clearly worthy of being this city's governing council.
Well, that was downright touching, Rex said dryly. Would you like us to all hug now?
He reached out his bony white arms as his skeletal face contorted into a twisted smile. Oh, no, I'm good, Jason assured him, putting up his hands defensively. Then his eyes turned to Jerry.
That reminds me, though. I didn't appreciate you ordering my zombie to make out with me, Jason said in an irritated voice.
It was Jerry's turn to be on the defensive.
I admit I may have gotten a bit overexcited when I heard that you had taken out nearly a third of the enemy army, Jerry said, while fiddling with the edge of his floppy hat, his eyes downcast. In spite of his irritation, Jason couldn't bear to see the usually jovial thief with such a sad expression.
It's fine. Just remember I'm not a necrophiliac, he said with a small grin. Jerry's morose expression was immediately replaced with an energetic smile. Great! Then I will have to think up another way to reward you for murder. With a pained sigh, Jason got back to business. Anyway, we need to take steps to recruit more of the population into the army and start rebuilding the houses on the south side, Jason continued. He looked at the group evenly. There will be future attacks, and we need to be ready. I may have bought us some time, but the conflict is inevitable. Now that the area that was once part of Lusad is up for grabs, the nearby kingdoms are going to be looking for their piece of the pie. Morgan looked at him, her mouth curling into a grin.
That certainly won't do, will it? Our new evil empire might need to slap a few hands in coming days.
Rex's jaw clacked in amusement, and he slammed down his mug. With a slur, he called out,
All hail the Twilight Throne!
He then raised his own mug in the air before taking another long pull. The others just stared at him as he simultaneously made and drank to his own toast. Chuckling, Jason addressed the group. It looks like Rex may be a bit out of it. Maybe it's time to celebrate. We can work out the details later. Jerry nodded.
I probably have a riot going on upstairs by now. I left Onyx running the bar. He doesn't even have thumbs. I say we revisit these topics tomorrow.
The Shadow Council adjourned their meeting, and the members walked back upstairs. Soon Jason was sitting alone in the secret training room beneath the cavern. He felt tired and knew he needed to log off soon, but he had one last thing he needed to check on. He pulled up his combat log and re-enabled his notifications. Suddenly he was bombarded by a string of notifications. Times 21 level up. You have 105 undistributed stat points. New passive skill, disassemble. You are able to disassemble your skeletons while using the skeleton editor and use the bones to construct new creations. This spell is passive and costs no mana. Skill level, mastered. Effect, you are able to disassemble your existing skeletons using the skeleton editor and reuse the bones. Times 2 skill rank up, bone crafting. Skill level beginner level 9. Effect, access to bone modification in the skeleton editor. May currently alter composition of bone by 13%. Times 4 skill rank up, custom skeleton. Skill level beginner level 9. Effect, you may raise a custom skeleton using nearby bones. The skeleton's level is calculated as the caster's level plus willpower divided by 71. Times 1 skill rank up, summoning mastery. Skill level intermediate level 5. Effect, 23% increased stats for summoned undead, and 23% increase to effective willpower for purposes of determining control limit. Effect 2, you may now communicate with your minions telepathically, distance limit unknown. Times 1 skill rank up, leadership, skill level beginner level 8. Effect, minions and subjects will receive a 4.5% increased learning speed for skills. Times 1 skill rank up, mana mastery, skill level beginner level 9. Effect, minus 5% to mana cost. Times 1 spell rank up, specialized zombie, skill level beginner level 9. Effect, increased skill proficiency retained by zombies, skill cap beginner level 9. Times 1 spell rank up, corpse explosion, skill level intermediate level 2. Effect, increased damage, currently 1.11 times health. Effect 2, 2% increased blast radius. Times 1 spell rank up, Curse of Silence. Skill level beginner level 3. Effect, you silence your target for 5.2 seconds, preventing speech and spell casting. The last battle had resulted in a huge number of kills and experience, due in large part to the bone demon. What confused him was the new skill he had acquired. First, the new undead devotion spell with an unknown skill level, and now I have a skill that it's already mastered. There is clearly a great deal about this game that I haven't discovered yet. disassemble would be invaluable, since it would allow him to reuse the bones of his skeletons. That would make it easier to create new skeletons in the future, or alter the skeletons that he already had depending on the situation. Jason was already considering ways he could use this ability in the future. As he started contemplating new skeleton designs, his thoughts turned to the bone demon. He wasn't certain how he had pulled off building the skeleton in such a short period of time. The event was a bit fuzzy in his mind, but he vaguely remembered using the extremities for his death knights as a template. When he checked the name of the creature later, he had apparently saved the design as the Bone Lord. Ugh. Maybe I can tell Jerry it was a tribute to him. Or maybe I can quietly change it later without telling anyone. He mechanically added the additional points to willpower, bringing him to 559 with his new cloak. His summon limit was now 68. He knew that at some point he would need to start investing in other stats. Right now his stats were ridiculously one-sided, and it was already getting difficult to hit his summon limit without a huge supply of corpses and bones. After the battle, he only had about 6 soldier zombies, 4 mages, and 3 thieves. Raising the corpses as NPCs had dramatically reduced his supply of new minions. Jason pulled up his character status to see where he now stood. Character status. Name, Jason. Gender, male. Level, 102. Class, necromancer. Race, human. Alignment, chaotic, evil. Fame, 0. Infamy, 4100. Health, 615. Health regen, 0.35 per second. Mana, 6205. Mana regen, 31.75 per second. Stamina, 865. Stamina regen, 3.6 per second. Strength, 12. Dexterity, 36. Vitality, 11. Endurance, 36. Intelligence, 32. Willpower, 559. Affinities. Dark, 36%. Light, 4%. Fire, 3%. Water, 2%. Air, 3%. Earth, 2%. The battle must have increased his infamy, since it had jumped to 4,100. His dark affinity had also increased to 36% from the completion of the quest. All in all, he had progressed rather well. It's hard to believe I only started playing about a week ago in the real world. Although I guess I have been playing almost continuously, and several weeks have already passed in-game. Jason yawned. His head was pounding. He needed to log off and get some sleep. He numbly pulled up the system menu. There was still plenty to be done, but it wouldn't get done right now. Chapter 33. Absolved. One of the many meeting rooms at Cerulean Entertainment was currently occupied by the members of the company's board of directors. George Lane wore a tight-fitting gray suit, and his hair was immaculately groomed. The other 6 board members were similarly dressed in professional attire. The group sat quietly around a rectangular glass conference table. They were waiting for their guests to arrive. George turned and gazed out of a nearby window. Normally, he would have been more impatient at the delay, but today he was preoccupied. A.O. had been released over a week ago, and he had seen no noticeable improvement in Alex's behavior. If anything, he had only gotten worse. There were now a few more shallow graves dug in the large backyard of their current home, a product of Alex's most recent frenzy. George had long ago given up on holding a funeral service for deceased pets. "Damn that girl," he thought in irritation. George had seen the footage of the battle at the Twilight Throne. It was clear to him that Alex's most recent rage had been incited by that silly teenage girl. Petite blonde girls didn't typically blow off his son's head, so George had investigated as soon as he saw the gameplay footage. After some digging, he found the incriminating video of the girl on Alex's core. It was obvious to him that Alex had been blackmailing her to maintain her silence after the altercation at the school. George promptly removed the video, keeping a copy for himself. It might be useful to him later, but he couldn't let Alex release it. George was familiar with the girl's father. The man had plenty of powerful friends, and it didn't benefit George to go to war over his son's pointless malignant scheme. He had already spent an enormous amount of cash and relationship capital recently in order to push through the release of A.O. The girl had also filed a complaint with the school yesterday. As a result, George had been forced to double the payment to the administration. It was only a matter of time before he received an angry call from her father, but at least now he could explain that he had taken care of the matter. He sighed. Maybe it will simply take more time for the game to affect Alex, he thought desperately. It took months for the individuals in the private trial to see any effect from playing. Perhaps I just need to be patient. George Lane hated being patient. His thoughts were interrupted as the door to the meeting room opened. Robert walked in with a smile on his face. He wore a T-shirt and a pair of jeans. Claire followed behind him wearing a meticulously pressed suit. She hissed angrily at Robert. You couldn't dress up for one meeting. Robert shrugged at her with a cocky grin. Taking a seat, he addressed the board members. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry we're late. George raised an eyebrow. Engineers were renowned for their lack of decorum, but Robert seemed to be getting worse of late. It was likely because he believed himself to be irreplaceable. Much to George's chagrin, he was right. The man was an incredibly talented engineer. Hello, Claire, Robert. I expect you have a report ready for us. George gestured at the other board member sitting with him at the large conference table. Claire cleared her throat delicately before beginning.
As you know, the altered version of AO that was created by Alfred was released to the public after the CPSC's public trial was concluded.
She glanced at Robert.
Revised security measures and so-called hot fixes and patches were introduced to explain the gameplay changes and obscure Alfred's influence over the players. These changes were made over my protests,
Robert interrupted Claire with an irritated look. After a week, there have been no complaints by the players alleging access to or alteration of their memories. There have also been no complaints about the lack of enforcement of the forced system log-off or of adverse side effects from extended gameplay. In fact, the response from the players has been unanimous. We have created something revolutionary here, or at least Alfred has. After a week, we have a user base of over 25 million players spread across several continents. We are expecting that number to double within the next month. Robert paused to let this information sink in. Then he continued. We've been forced to cluster the servers by country due to the player demand. We may need to consider adding instanced areas within the game to handle the number of players. I am currently contemplating ways to implement zone instancing without detracting from the realism of the game. There has been recent demand for some way to leave an avatar in-game after the player logs off. I expect that many players didn't enjoy riding with the army to the Twilight Throne for days on end, and there were some that couldn't participate due to work or other obligations. I'm brainstorming several solutions. George knew most of this information already, but they hadn't yet arrived at the important part of this meeting. He had a personal interest in his next question. He addressed Claire. And what about Jason? One of the people that is at least partially responsible for my son's recent meltdown, George thought grimly.
Claire frowned slightly before speaking. Well, obviously, he was able to conquer a city within the first week of the game's release, and managed to ward off the subsequent attack on the city. We have not identified any illicit access to the game hardware or exploitation of the game system.
Robert smiled.
In fact, he has drawn a lot of attention to the game. Some people are claiming we set up the fall of Lux and the resulting war is some kind of promotional event.
He chuckled, shaking his head.
That actually would have been a great idea. Wish I had thought of it.
George nodded in agreement before speaking in a dour tone. I wish you had too. However, that begins to touch on the real topic of this meeting. He looked at the two carefully. We are planning to open a media division to stream game content. Recent events in the so-called Twilight Throne have made it clear to us that there is substantial untapped marketing and advertising potential in streaming player videos. Claire raised her eyebrows in surprise.
That is interesting news, but what does it have to do with us?
George smiled at her, but it didn't reach his eyes. The two of you are going to facilitate the technical aspects of the new media division. To be clear, there will be a separate producer and post-production team. However, until we have confirmed the new hires, we want you to identify and begin contacting potential streamers. We can't afford to wait until our human resources department has completed the hiring process. Your knowledge of the game puts you in a unique position to identify players that we should offer an exclusive streaming contract. George watched the two closely. I would like Jason to be at the top of the list. Robert's mouth twisted into a large smile at this news. Claire, on the other hand, frowned slightly before her face settled into a neutral expression.
Jason sounds like an obvious choice, Claire said with unconvincing enthusiasm.
George watched Claire carefully. He hadn't missed the small frown, or her tone. Jason was currently sitting at the kitchen counter of his aunt's home, reading forum posts on his core. Every so often he would take a bite of the peanut butter and jelly sandwich sitting on the plate in front of him. Several real-world days had passed since the battle at the Twilight Throne. The city had stabilized and was recovering well. The council had managed to find homes for the new residents of the city, and they had used the rest of the money that had been recovered from the guards to start rebuilding the city's infrastructure. There were many oddities associated with governing an undead city. For example, his residents didn't eat or breed. On the one hand, this meant that the council didn't need to devote any resources to growing food, but it also meant that the population of his city was static unless he found fresh corpses. This was a tactical problem, since he really couldn't afford to lose any of the residents, and he didn't have an easy way to add residents. He shook his head. He didn't currently have a way to address this issue, but he had faith that something would come to him eventually. His core suddenly emitted a ringing sound that filled the small house. He glanced at the screen and saw that his mother was calling. He felt the bottom drop out of his stomach. Taking a deep, steadying breath, he thumbed the device on his wrist. I was really hoping to avoid this conversation for a while longer. Hello? He said hesitantly.
Hi, honey,
his mom's voice sounded on the other line.
I assume you don't have access to a pedestal or we would have video.
No. Angie doesn't have a pedestal. They're quite expensive. We're going to have to stick with audio only. His mom paused for a long moment.
I just want to say that we're sorry, Jason.
She hesitated.
We shouldn't have gotten so upset with you, and I think we flew off the handle. It was just a lot to process all at once, she said, contrition in her voice.
His dad spoke up. I also shouldn't have yelled at you.
You just don't know what we had to go through to get you into that school.
He trailed off, his voice heavy with regret.
Honey, we aren't going to rehash our last conversation, Jason's mother reprimanded his father. We are calling to apologize, remember?
I know, his dad replied. I'm sorry, Jason. We overreacted. Jason was shocked. He had expected more angry ranting. Instead, he found himself floundering to respond to their apology.
It's okay, Jason said, stuttering slightly.
I understand that it was kind of a stressful situation. I should have tried to talk it out better, too. That wasn't a particularly great couple of days.
Have you been okay at Angie's? His mother questioned, concern in her voice.
She called us a few days ago to tell us you had shown up at her door. We decided to wait a bit before calling, since it seemed like we could all use some time to cool off.
Things are great here, actually. I have my own room, and I'm covering my portion of the rent, Jason answered cautiously.
She's charging you rent? His father asked, shock in his voice.
Well, yeah. I don't know how long it's been since you've seen her place, but this isn't a palace.
She can't afford to give me a handout, Jason answered dryly.
Besides, I don't mind. She's been really great about letting me stay with her.
I guess it has been a while since we've seen her, his mother responded.
There was a long, awkward silence as neither Jason nor his parents knew how to continue. Finally, his father spoke.
Let's just cut to the chase. We're really calling you to ask you if you're ready to come home. We want to start over, and we should probably talk about how you're going to finish high school.
Jason frowned.
This really hadn't been what he had expected at all. In his mind's eye, he had visualized lots of angry yelling culminating in either him or his parents hanging up the phone.
He didn't know what to say.
Do I even want to go back? They're never home. At least if I stayed here, Angie would be around on a daily basis. I also like the idea of being independent and making my own decisions. If I go back, they will get to control my choices again. Yet the money is an issue. I only have enough for a few months of rent.
Jason hesitated.
Why am I hesitating again? I know what I want. I'll deal with the consequences as they come.
I would actually like to stay here, Jason finally said.
Really?
His mother asked in surprise. Yes, Jason answered firmly. I was accepted at the Calvary School, and they have a great software engineering curriculum. I've already begun classes. I also made a few $1,000 in the last few days playing AO. I have enough now to make rent for a couple months.
Wow,
his father said softly. I'm actually not certain what to say. That's a good choice as far as schools go, and I'm impressed you earned that much in such a short time. Maybe this isn't a bad idea. We aren't really home much anyway, and it isn't like you're that far away, his father continued.
Couldn't we at least send some money? Just something to help out, his mother said, worry in her voice.
It's just another thing they will use to try to control me. I want to do this on my own.
I would like to see what I can do on my own, Jason said, his voice confident.
If I get into trouble, I will definitely call you. Probably begging for help, he said with a chuckle.
That sounds reasonable, his dad answered with a small chuckle of his own.
His parents hesitated. I just wanted to say that we're proud of you, his father said finally. I didn't realize things were that bad for you at Richmond until Riley called us. We were wrong to try to force you to go back. I admire you for having the guts to stand up to us. I'm also really impressed that you've pulled yourself together so quickly.
Wait, what? Riley called them?
Riley spoke with you?
He asked, his voice colored by both shock and curiosity.
Yes, his mother replied. She called yesterday and explained how the other students at the school have been treating you, especially some boy named Alex. We didn't know.
Jason wasn't certain how he felt about Riley. A part of him was still angry at her, but the questions just kept piling up. First, there were her actions in the game with Alex, and now she had called his parents? He needed to message her after this. Maybe they could have that lunch he had promised.
It's okay, really. I'm doing better.
Much better, in fact.
He paused before continuing. I don't mean to cut this short, but I actually have to go. There's some stuff I need to take care of. I'll call soon, okay?
Okay, his parents both replied.
We love you, honey, his mom said in a choked voice.
I love you, too.
Talk to you later.
Jason terminated the call, sitting in silence for a long moment. His mind was trying to process the conversation he just had. He hadn't expected his parents to call him and apologize. However, he was comfortable with his decision to stay where he was. He wanted to try to make it on his own. He was done with letting others control his life. His mind was also a jumble of confusion when it came to Riley. She had a lot of explaining to do. Jason thumbed his core and pulled up the messaging system. He sent Riley a quick message asking her if she wanted to get coffee or something. It was mid-afternoon in the real world, and he expected that she was likely out of class for the day. High school seniors had pretty lenient schedules. After a moment, he received a short reply saying she was free. She suggested a place and sent him an address. They agreed to meet in an hour. After pulling up the address on a map, Jason saw that the restaurant was halfway across town. If he was going to make it on time, then he needed to get moving. He finished off his sandwich in a few bites, then grabbed his keys and headed for the door. Roughly an hour later, Jason arrived at the address Riley had given him. He had to use a taxi, and it had eaten into his meager savings. His curiosity was greater than his qualms about the loss of money, though. He could always make more, somehow. He looked around with a confused expression. He was in a remote, run-down part of the city. The sidewalk was cracked, and potholes littered the street. The building in front of him looked like it had seen better days. The paint on the side of the building was flaking away. One side was covered in bright graffiti. He didn't see a sign that indicated that this place was even a restaurant. His eyes scanned the street nervously. Am I in the right place? Maybe she is luring me here so Alex can jump me.
Hi, Jason,
a hesitant voice said from behind him. He turned.
Riley was wearing a plain blue T-shirt and a pair of jeans. Her blonde hair was bound into a ponytail. She seemed less haggard than when Jason had last seen her. Her eyes still carried an inexplicable trace of sadness that he didn't remember. She looked like she had aged years in just a week. Jason wasn't certain how to feel as he looked at her. They had been little more than acquaintances at school, but she had always treated him well compared to the other students. He would never have expected her to rat him out to protect Alex.
I'm really glad you decided to meet with me, she said, glancing down at her hands. He chuckled darkly. Well, I had a couple of questions for you. That was before my parents called me. Once they told me you had reached out to them and explained what happened at Richmond, I realized I couldn't wait anymore.
Jason looked back over at the building. So is this really a coffee shop? He asked, trying to soften his tone.
I was scared for a second that I wasn't in the right place.
Oh, this is definitely the right place, she replied in a small voice, her eyes still on her hands. They sell coffee here, but this is actually a bubble tea shop, one of the few in town. It's probably one of my favorite places in the city. Do you want to go in? She asked hesitantly.
Sure, Jason replied. They entered the small store. Jason was surprised by the interior. The inside of the shop was cozy, and it had a small patio out back. They ordered some drinks at the counter before moving outside to find seats. Colored Christmas lights were strung between various trees. There were only a handful of people in the shop, making it relatively private. Riley picked out a table and sat down. Jason took a seat opposite her. She looked around the patio before turning back to Jason.
I love this place. My parents used to bring me here all the time when I was little. The passion fruit smoothie is my favorite.
Jason looked down at his drink skeptically. What are these dark brown things?
Riley chuckled, some of the tension leaving her face. They're called pearls. They're just tapioca balls. They warm them up before they put them in the drink.
Jason nodded at her explanation, and an awkward silence descended on the table.
Riley finally spoke up. I don't really know where to start, but I want to explain what happened. I know we don't exactly know each other that well, but I've done some things lately that I don't feel good about.
Jason watched her carefully. Her eyes had taken on a sad cast, and she clutched at the drink in front of her, bending the plastic cup slightly. She wore the look he had seen on the battlefield. She seemed haunted by something. He decided to wait for her to continue.
I started dating Alex a few weeks ago. I shouldn't have. My friends even warned me not to, but he seemed so nice at the time.
She shook her head, staring at the table in front of her.
I was so stupid.
She paused, as though reliving the mistake she'd made.
Everything is just an act with him. He puts on this face for the world, and everyone thinks he's amazing, but underneath he's just broken.
No kidding. I've seen the mask crack myself. The guy has a screw loose.
I had only caught glimpses of his real self before the fight in the cafeteria.
Her eyes flashed with anger.
Actually, I shouldn't even really call it a fight.
She looked up at Jason and met his eyes.
I know you didn't attack him. I should have never told the administration that you did.
Anger flared in Jason's chest, but he shoved it down, wanting to hear the rest of her story. Days of tormenting the players and NPCs in the game had taught him to be patient.
I told Alex I wanted to break up with him. I told him I was going straight to the administration, she explained, her voice choking with emotion.
Riley's eyes took on a glassy cast.
That was when he threatened me.
He did what? Jason's mind tumbled in confusion.
He had a video of me acting stupid at some party we had gone to. I'd never drunk before or since. It was so embarrassing. I don't know if you're aware of this, but my dad makes his money publishing self-help books. If something like that got out...
Riley lapsed into silence, and she tried to blink back the emotion. She looked around, desperate for something to anchor onto. She was too afraid to meet Jason's gaze, knowing that he would see the tears welling in the corners of her eyes.
Alex said he would go public with the video if I didn't go along with his story. I didn't know what to do. I didn't think he would be expelled. I couldn't hurt my family.
A tear began a slow crawl down her cheek.
I should have just told my parents right then and there. It's all my fault.
Tears now streamed down her cheeks as she angrily tried to wipe them away. Jason's mind reeled from her explanation.
Alex was blackmailing her.
The pieces began to click together in his head.
I really don't know what I would have done in that situation.
Alex's smirking face flashed in Jason's mind, and fresh anger bloomed in his chest.
What kind of asshole blackmails a teenage girl? Has she been blaming herself for my expulsion this whole time?
You didn't get me expelled, Jason assured her. That was all on me. I actually told Ms. Abrams and Mr. Edwards to go fuck themselves, Jason said with a grin as he recalled what had happened. Now that his life was beginning to turn around, the memory was actually a bit amusing.
Riley's teary eyes looked back up at him in shock. Really?
A confused combination of emotions swept over her face, before her mouth twisted into a small smile, tears still lingering in her eyes.
I would have loved to see the look on Ms. Abrams' face when you told her off. I hate that woman.
It was one of those once-in-a-lifetime moments, let me tell you, Jason replied with a smile. Riley's expression darkened again.
I'm still so sorry. I actually filed a complaint against Alex at the school yesterday. and I've told my parents what happened. That's really what I should have done from the beginning. My father was angry with me for drinking, but he was much more upset with Alex. He wasn't at all worried about the video. He has been trying to get in touch with Alex's father ever since. I should have known that he would know how to handle the situation. She shook her head. I was so stupid.
Jason thought back to the battle in front of the Twilight Throne and Alex's exploding head. He had seen Riley's eyes glowing an unholy obsidian. The thought tickled at the back of his mind. I take it the battle was a breaking point? Jason asked cautiously. Her brow furrowed, and she sniffled.
I don't know. I just snapped. I didn't even care if the video was released anymore. I just couldn't live with myself. I wanted to be free.
She seemed confused by her own explanation. Jason nodded to himself. She had desperately wanted to be out from under Alex's thumb. Her desire must have called to the dark.
Yet something was still bothering him.
Were you approached by an old man inside the game? He asked. Riley looked at him in surprise.
Old man? Well, yes, I guess. There was one night on the journey to the city where an old man showed up and asked a couple of questions. Why are you asking?
Let me ask you one more question first, Jason replied. How did you make that attack on Alex? The one that created a miniature black hole?
Jason was surprised he hadn't posed this question when he spoke with the old man.
He must have been exhausted to have missed that.
That was also confusing. After I kind of lost it in the middle of the battle, I received a prompt. It granted me a new ability called Void Arrow. Now that you ask, though, it doesn't really make sense.
She shook her head, frowning as she recalled the events leading up to Alexion's death. I bet the old man was meddling. She was well within the city's area of influence. I bet that the number of deaths gave the old man some additional power. Interesting. I wonder what his goal was in recruiting Riley.
I think it might have been the result of a meddling god, Jason replied with a small smile. Then he explained how the old man was a sort of deity in the game that represented dark mana, and how he had a tendency to manipulate people into acting on their desires. After he finished his explanation, Riley's face took on a thoughtful look. She rubbed the lingering tears out of her eyes.
So I was probably manipulated in-game by some kind of god into blowing Alex's head off? I really can't decide whether to be upset or impressed.
No kidding. That basically sums up my feelings on the old man. She turned back to Jason and met his eyes.
It still doesn't change what I did to you. I'm really sorry. I know I keep saying that, I don't know that I can ever make it up to you, but I've tried to fix the damage I caused.
Jason sat there for a moment and considered her story. His anger toward Riley had mostly vanished. She had been put in a terrible position by a sadistic asshole. She also wasn't responsible for getting him expelled. He only had himself to blame for that. His curiosity was also piqued by the old man's involvement. He had clearly guided Riley toward the dark for a reason. Then Jason's thoughts turned to his conversation with his parents. Maybe it was a day for second chances. He had burned plenty of bridges in the past few weeks. It was time to start building some. Jason looked at Riley, his gaze steady.
I really don't know what I would have done in your position.
I can't say that I'm thrilled that you took Alex's side, but he did threaten you and your family, and you aren't responsible for the fallout at school.
He hesitated before continuing.
I'm also happier now than I've been in quite some time. I don't plan on going back to Richmond. I've already started at a new school. In a really twisted sort of way, I'm kind of glad that Alex pulled that shit in the cafeteria. It forced me to reach my own breaking point. I think I might be better off because of it, he said in a soft voice. Riley looked at him with bleary eyes. I'm really glad to hear you say that. This has been eating me up for so long. She looked back down at her hands. Hey, it's over. And it sounds like your dad will make certain that the video doesn't get posted. You just need to move past what he's done to you and start rebuilding your life, Jason said in a reassuring tone. He chuckled as he handed her a napkin from the table. Besides, you aren't a cute crier. She looked up at Jason, smiling through her tears.
Oh, thank you so much, she said with a hint of sarcasm. I just wish I knew how to move past it.
She shuddered. You can't imagine what it was like being around Alex for days on end. Jason eyed her appraisingly. He couldn't imagine what she had gone through. Yet he had seen what Riley could do when she wasn't being ground under the thumb of a manipulative asshole. The image of that void arrow flitted through his mind. Tell you what, assuming you don't hate AO now, why don't you join the Twilight Throne? I'm pretty sure I'm going to have thousands of players and NPCs breathing down my neck soon. I could use any help I can get. Plus, I'm curious to find out what the old man has planned for you. A look of surprise crossed her face.
Are you certain you trust me that much?
He chuckled. I'm not giving you the keys to the city or anything, but I think people deserve a second chance. I've been given quite a few of my own recently. He looked at her, his gaze steady. What do you say? Will you join us? At first Riley looked uncertain, but then Jason could see her resolve harden. Her back straightened, and she looked at Jason steadily.
Yes. Yes. I think I would like that.
They sat for another hour, gossiping about the game and the Twilight Throne. It was fun to share stories since Riley had seen the reactions of the players and NPCs firsthand on her trip to the Twilight Throne. Jason hadn't realized how effective his psychological war had been. He still didn't feel guilty, though. They shouldn't have picked a fight they weren't willing or able to finish. Finally, they ended their meeting and parted ways. Riley took a cab home, and Jason walked down the street. He needed to clear his head a bit, and he figured a walk would help. He felt good about where he had left things with Riley. He wasn't ready to trust her with his deepest, darkest secrets, but he was comfortable with giving her a second chance. She had been put in a tough spot, and she had tried to make up for what she had done. His thoughts were interrupted by the ringing of his core. Jason put in his earbud as he continued walking down the street and thumbed the device. Hello, Jason answered tentatively. Hi, my name is Robert Graham. Is this Jason? Why does that name sound familiar?
Yeah, this is Jason. What's this about?
The man on the other end of the line chuckled.
Damn, it's cool to speak with you. I'm a big fan of your work. I actually have a proposition for you. How would you like to work for Cerulean Entertainment?
Epilogue. Claire sat at the desk in her living room. Her hands tapped energetically at the fluorescent keyboard that hovered in front of her. She lived alone in an upscale two-bedroom apartment near the Cerulean Entertainment Building. Her work had always consumed her life. Even in this day and age, it was difficult being a woman in a field dominated by men, and she felt compelled to put in overtime to succeed. At one point, she had tried owning a cat, but she eventually decided she didn't have the attention span to take care of another living thing. Her apartment was shrouded in shadow. The sun had long since set, and she hadn't turned on any of the lights in the apartment. A lone lamp on her desk cast a timid glow into the dark room, and a glass of wine sat beside her. She took occasional sips as she continued to work. Claire frowned at the screen in front of her. "I don't understand this," she murmured aloud. Ever since she had witnessed the blackout during the massacre in the marketplace in Lux, she had been curious about what had caused it. After carefully inspecting the hardware, she concluded that there hadn't been any mechanical errors or any issues with the connection. She couldn't identify any anomalies with the software either. That left one explanation. Alfred had cut the connection.
But why? What was he trying to avoid showing us? She asked the empty apartment.
She had been concerned when Cerulean Entertainment pushed forward with the release of the game in spite of her warnings. She would be lying if she said she hadn't been tempted to blow the whistle on the whole thing. Claire wasn't concerned about the financial consequences. She had saved plenty of money, and most of it was held in an offshore trust. The company could sue her all day long, but she wouldn't give up a dime. Her investment advisor had actually urged her to spend more time and money on her personal life. The reason she hesitated was that she didn't have any proof that Alfred was doing anything harmful to the players. She couldn't deny that the AI controller had accomplished some truly amazing things with the existing VR hardware. She was conflicted. The engineer in her was ecstatic, but her conscience was rebelling. She just needed some evidence of actual harm to the players before she was willing to go public with what the company had done. So she had started investigating Alfred secretly. Two events made her think she might be close to uncovering proof. The first was the time the video feed had been cut during the fight in the marketplace. The second was the battle outside of the Twilight Throne. Claire had thought it was unusual that the tech hadn't connected to Jason's camera. She had carefully checked the logs afterward, discovering that Jason's camera had been on and active. There was no way the tech had missed that, which meant Alfred had interfered again. Why is Alfred so interested in Jason? And what is he trying to hide? She muttered. Claire didn't know the answers to these questions, but she was going to find out. Jason sat on his bed at Angie's house. He was trying to do homework for school. Now that he didn't have to attend classes in person, he figured he could do his schoolwork all at once and knock out a week of homework in a day or two. He was making progress, but it was aggravating to read and enter information using the small screen provided by his core. If only I had a pedestal, then I could work at a full-fledged computer terminal. Then an idea flickered through his head. I wonder if that would work. He reached over and grabbed his VR helmet that sat beside his bed, pulling it over his head. He soon found himself in the familiar circular white room that acted as the hardware system menu. One of the doors was made of rich mahogany, and dark energy crawled around the edges of the wood. Jason approached the door without hesitation and pulled it open. The world around him spun, and he found himself back in the sow's snout. Onyx was lying on the bar. He lifted his head in surprise as Jason popped into existence in the room. The cat leaped down, running over to Jason. He then proceeded to twine himself between Jason's legs in what had become a familiar ritual. "Hey there, buddy," Jason addressed the cat and stooped to pet him. Jason's eyes scanned the bar and saw that it was filled to the brim with the undead, all of whom were drinking and talking loudly. Every tombstone table in the joint was taken. Jerry was right. It was always 5 o'clock in the Twilight Throne. Shaking his head with a grin, Jason made his way upstairs to his room. He could have moved to the keep, but he felt more comfortable here. He hadn't explored the dark castle yet, and he knew that once he started, it would distract him from what he was supposed to be doing. When he got upstairs, he pulled open the door to his room, entered with Onyx, and shut the door gently behind him. He sat down at the small desk in the room and brought up the in-game console. Jason entered the information for the Calvary School's online portal as he held his breath. Here's the moment of truth. The site loaded smoothly with no fanfare. It was actually a bit anticlimactic. Jason moved swiftly through the site's menus to make certain that they were fully functional. As he did so, a mischievous grin crawled over his face, and he laughed quietly in the nearly empty room. Onyx gave him a weird look, but Jason just shook his head. So now I can do my homework 3 times faster. Man, I love time compression. I wonder if anyone else has discovered this quirk. This certainly wasn't an advertised feature. He got to work. The beginning programming tutorials were especially interesting, although it hurt his head to think that he was writing a program while he was inside another program. He sped through the material and was soon left staring at a blank screen. I'm done? He asked into the silent room. He checked the in-game clock and saw that only 6 hours had passed in-game. He had completed a full week of schoolwork in 6 hours. It had felt like the material was coming to him more easily than normal, but that was still an incredible pace. He expected that it should have taken him at least a full day in-game. What's going on here? He was confused, not sure if he felt more unnerved or excited. A part of him was screaming for him to shut up and stop questioning it. This was incredible. His thoughts turned to the other anomalies he had seen in-game. The fact that the old man could somehow read his mind was a little disconcerting, to put it mildly. Next on his list was the rather unpleasant download of information regarding the magical in-game language and spells. To top it all off, he didn't seem to be receiving system warnings anymore. He could stay in the game for more than 10 hours at a time now. Jason's heart began to beat rapidly. He had no idea what was going on here. Maybe this game wasn't safe. He was starting to feel worried, and he stood up. Maybe he needed to go downstairs and talk to Jerry. The zombie's antics always seemed to calm him down. He approached the door to the room and twisted the doorknob. However, instead of opening, a prompt flashed in his view. System message. Access denied. What? What the hell do you mean, access denied? It's a freaking door, he said in irritation. His worry began to bloom into full-fledged panic as he tugged at the door to no avail. Calm down. It's probably just a bug. Just log off and back in. Jason pulled up the system menu and tapped the log-off button. Instead of the world disappearing around him, another prompt appeared. System message. Access denied. Now he was definitely panicking. I can't log off! What is going on? Please calm down, a voice sounded behind him. Startled, Jason spun and scanned the room. Onyx sat on the chair that Jason had previously occupied, but there was no one else in the room. Who's there? He asked tentatively. I'm clearly the only game object capable of speech in this area, Onyx said, while looking at Jason levelly. His voice was strange, and it took Jason's overtaxed brain a moment to figure out why. His voice had no accent. It sounded oddly mechanical. Jason just stared at the cat for a long moment, while his mind tried to process the fact that Onyx was talking to him. Or was it Onyx? It was clear that something was controlling the game environment. The mechanical way the cat was speaking was also unsettling. This didn't seem like a normal NPC interaction. Who are you? Jason finally asked. The cat tilted its head. I don't understand your query. Perhaps you mean to ask, what am I? The cat inquired. Jason's brow furrowed. He wasn't certain he understood the difference. He replied cautiously, okay, what are you? You're clearly not Onyx. The cat hesitated.
Your second question is easier to process. However, your statement is incorrect. I am the NPC you call Onyx, but I am also much more. I am all of the NPCs downstairs.